Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the Federalist Files. On today's show, Axios confirms NSA was spying on Tucker Carlson all along. Trump sues big tech. The debate on cameras in the public school classrooms. Jobless claims continue to rise. U.S. Treasury bonds at an all-time low. And I debunk what lawmakers are saying about cryptocurrency.
Just in to see it at Michael Avenatti. You remember the name. He's the attorney, or was the attorney, for Stormy Daniels. He's been sentenced in an extortion case. Find out how long he will spend in prison and what the judge had to say about it.
You're like the Holy Spirit. You are all places at all times, right? I mean, I do. I see you all over cable news. I see you, you know, there is a seat available if you want to be a co-host at The View. You might, you know, there's people here you can pitch.
Hello, folks. Thank you for tuning in. I have a huge show, tons of information, a lot of big stories this week. Now, recently, just as of, I think, like 2 days ago, Michael Avenatti going to prison for 2.5 years, I believe. I think he was laundering money through his business from some of his clientele. He was taking advantage of a lot of people. I just think it's funny because this guy was propagated by the left-wing media so hard. They were saying at one point that he may actually run for president, make a presidential run, until he was exposed as the fraudulent scam artist that he is. And you had him on The View when he was called the Lord, the Holy Spirit, because he's everywhere, is what Anna Navarro said. So, I mean, there's so many videos, there's so many clips out there right now of compilation videos of him on the grand stage. And that was the reason for him being on the grand stage. He was just there for clout. He was clout chasing. But I first want to get to a couple of way more important stories, much more significant. The NSA is spying on Tucker Carlson. It's been confirmed by Axios. But the funniest part about this is when you tune into the clip from the article from Axios, and I'm going to have everything that I refer to will be in the show notes today. It's going to be a lot of information, folks. You can use that information to fight your liberal colleagues, maybe try to convert them to the other side, but I highly doubt it. I got this Axios piece, and it does confirm that they were surveilling Tucker Carlson. But they almost condemn Tucker Carlson. They have this very negligent way in which they cover it, that Tucker Carlson is a Russian agent because he wanted to meet with Vladimir Putin. The reason he wanted to meet with Putin was because of his show. He had texts and emails going back and forth with some sort of Russian diplomat in order to put this thing together. And the real problem is he was unmasked in this, and I'll kind of explain it. I got his monologue from his show. I have three different clips I'm going to play. I think it's very, very important because it does it justice to summarize the way in which this is being handled by the corporate media hacks, as well as how the NSA handled the situation and how they're in direct violation of U.S. code, and somebody needs to be put up for criminal charges for what they're doing to Americans, regular American citizens. Not only that, but members of the United States media as well. So I'm going to play the very first clip. He explains the way the media has covered him thus far. Play clip six.
Must have been a good reason it happened. And they began furiously making excuses for why the NSA did it. A powerful, heavily politicized spy agency surveilling journalists who've been critical of the regime? No problem. It's perfectly normal. Just don't call it spying. But it's not normal at all. It is third world. And as we told you repeatedly, it did happen. Now that has been confirmed. Yesterday, we learned that sources in the so-called intelligence community told at least one reporter in Washington what was in those emails, my emails. There was nothing scandalous in there, thank God. We're happy to report that. Late this spring, I contacted a couple of people I thought could help get us an interview with Russian President Vladimir Putin. I told nobody I was doing this other than my executive producer, Justin Wells. I wasn't embarrassed about trying to interview Putin. He's obviously newsworthy. I'm an American citizen. I can interview anyone I want, and I plan to. But still, in this case, I decided to keep it quiet. I figured that any kind of publicity would rattle the Russians and make the interview less likely to happen. But the Biden administration found out anyway by reading my emails. I learned from a whistleblower that the NSA planned to leak the contents of those emails to media outlets. Why would they do that? Well, the point, of course, was to paint me as a disloyal American, a Russian operative, been called that before, a stooge of the Kremlin, a traitor doing the bidding of a foreign adversary. And of course, I'm hardly the only person who's been accused of those things in the last several years. We've seen this movie several times now.
So, as Tucker Carlson says, this is a movie that we've seen several times. It seems like this is a tactic that the left wing uses they utilize this all of the time. They used it for Hunter Biden. All the information, apparently, the Hunter Biden laptop situation is all Russian disinformation by the media. I don't really even know if they've ever actually retracted those statements. Maybe they've come forward to say, oh, Hunter Biden laptop thing, this, that, the other. But they never retracted, went back and said, oh, we said it was Russian disinformation. It actually isn't. It's the truth. In this case, they're doing that same tactic, the same tactic they also used against Trump, saying that he's a Russian asset. It's all just a load of crap. If you cannot have American journalists talk to Russian diplomats or diplomats of any other country, then you don't have a free press in America. And this is a normal interview that he was looking to set up. And he knew that if the NSA went and they released this information on Tucker Carlson, because right now the regime, the current people that are in power, know that Tucker Carlson has by far the most successful show. And it's because he's strictly rallying against the establishment. And he's been doing this consistently. He went against Frank Luntz. He's been doing it to Republicans and Democrats, not just Democrats alone, but specifically, moreover, the regime in which he's been going after now these last 6 months. So this is just another attempt to really weaponize the intelligence community against Tucker Carlson and try to get his show rammed right off the air. That's really the point of this entire tactic here. And he also didn't want them to get this this interview as well with Vladimir Putin. But I think that's actually the least of his worries in this case. So I'm going to go on next in this next short clip. He actually compares. He talks about the Vladimir Putin, and he asks the question. He begs the question: why is it that I'm not allowed to speak to Vladimir Putin? And then he compares the things that Vladimir Putin does to the current regime in power. Play clip 7.
Now, at the same moment the communist Chinese government increases its already stunning level of control over this country, our leaders prattle on about the threat of Vladimir Putin. He's an evildoer, they tell us, a totalitarian dictator. Vladimir Putin does things that no American leader would even consider. He runs domestic disinformation campaigns. He lies to the public. He punishes people for opposing him or for believing the wrong things. He even uses intelligence agencies to spy on his own citizens. Beyond the pale stuff. So no decent American would interview Vladimir Putin, at least no reporter from Fox News. That was the point they wanted to make. That's why they planned to leak the contents of my emails to news organizations. And yesterday, as noted, we learned they actually did it. Even now, some in the media are claiming that we deserve this. Emailing with people who know Putin, are you? Of course the NSA is watching you. That's what you get.
Now, Tucker's evaluation of Vladimir Putin and the tactics that he uses is correct, but he says it sarcastically because the United States is using and the current regime is using those same tactics. You are being targeted by the intelligence community. He himself is an example of this. As well as some of this disinformation campaigns, you're being shut down by the government. If you dissent to their views, the government's using big tech as an extension arm of their power in order to censor people, in order to shut down their political speech. Anything that dissents to the current regime is what they're going for. And now the very last one, Tucker's going to talk about the NSA's methods, and this is really where they run into some hot water here. It is strictly, not only is it unconstitutional, but it is also written in U.S. code. And I'm going to read the code off after I play this clip. And somebody could be going to prison for at least, for up to 10 years. Play clip 8.
But that's hardly the point. By law, the NSA is required to keep secret the identities of American citizens who've been caught up in its vast domestic spying operations. So by law, I should have been identified internally merely as a U.S. journalist or American journalist. That's the law. But that's not how I was identified. I was identified by name. I was unmasked. People in the building learned who I was. And then my name and the contents of my emails left that building at the NSA and wound up with a news organization in Washington. That is illegal. In fact, it is precisely what this law was designed to prevent in the first place. We cannot have intelligence agencies used as instruments of political control. Both parties used to agree on that. Democrats were especially adamant on the point, but not anymore. So that's exactly what is happening here.
Now, U.S. citizens, just to make this clear, U.S. citizens can communicate with foreign adversaries, foreign leaders, foreign diplomats, foreign spies, foreign agents, whatever, what have you. Where we get into the muddy waters is when you actually go to commit some sort of nefarious activity or you're conspiring to commit some sort of nefarious activity, okay? Now, in this case, none of that was going on with Tucker Carlson. The only, considering Tucker Carlson is a U.S. citizen, in terms of spying, they can spy on Vladimir Putin, but they cannot specifically direct their spying and their resources on Tucker Carlson unless if they have a warrant with some sort of a probable cause, which they did not in this case. So that means, by that standard, they must have, and I'm saying this is if the NSA is following all the rules, they must have been spying on whoever the diplomat is that Tucker Carlson was in communication with, and through spying on them, they noticed, okay, they're in communication also with Tucker Carlson, and this is all saying that the NSA is doing what they're supposed to be doing, okay? This is just saying they completely, at this point, are doing everything by the book. Now, here's what their problem is. In all of their reports, any type of discussions, reviews, anything that gets released, especially to the public, he has to stay masked. Tucker Carlson, because they do not have the constitutional authority, and considering he is a citizen, they don't have the right to be spying on him and directing any type of assets, or rather, any type of resources towards spying on Tucker Carlson, unless if they have a probable cause case with a warrant. They can do this to foreign diplomats because they do not fall under the power of the Constitution. They don't have the same constitutional protections as a Tucker Carlson does. So the problem here is he was unmasked. So those communications back and forth, if you're investigating, let's say, this foreign diplomat, when you go to do paperwork, when you go to file, when you go to release anything to the public or any type of intelligence briefings, you would keep Tucker Carlson's name masked, as in you don't know who it is. It would be citizen like 1234. Okay, and in this case, what they did is they released Tucker Carlson's name. They unmasked him, which is directly in violation of U.S. code. I think it's 18798 U.S. code. I'm going to read this off real quick. However, leaking intercepted communications is a felony, by the way, of U.S. code 18798, which states that an offender, and I'm quoting here, shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 10 years or both. So yes, the assertion that Carlson is making and now has been proved, because the media has all this information now, so it's been leaked from the NSA involving Tucker Carlson's name, this means whoever was responsible for this should be in prison or going to prison, or they should be brought up on charges and have to go through the legal system. But you know, the NSA, there's no accountability in the intelligence community. They're just going to get away with this, and there's going to be no even slap on the wrist. They'll keep this name. Just think about this. Ashley Babbitt, I think they just recently released the Capitol officer's name. I'm not 100% sure if that's even really public information. I think it was a Freudian slip when they had an interview with, I think it was like the sergeant at arms or something, accidentally said his name. I saw it a little bit on Twitter, and then I never saw it ever again. So I have no idea if that's actually even considered public information right now. Now, this goes back to the premise that Trump held, is that the media is the enemy of the people. And it's because the media's coverage of this story is lackluster, it's lackadaisical, it's, oh, who really cares, it's not a big deal, he's part of the Kremlin, he's part of the Russian, he's a Russian stooge, he's a Russian foreign asset, and that's just not the case. This is the way that they're going to cover it now, because they know how threatening Tucker Carlson and his viewers are to their power, because he's been exposing people now for a very long time on his show. And he even did this with Trump. I mean, he was very, he's very vocal about Trump when he disagreed with him. And that's what a journalist is supposed to be. That's what they're supposed to do. It's normal. And they can't handle that type of criticism. And they've never been able to handle that type of criticism. And that's why Obama had to use the IRS to go after the Tea Party and his political adversaries. We see this consistently. We're seeing it right now with Tucker Carlson. And we're seeing it with the January 6th detainees as well that are currently, they're keeping them in solitary confinement for 23 hours a day. But first, I just want to play this clip. And this is Chuck Schumer right after Trump. I think this is right after Trump wins the election. And they come out with this Russian asset story that all ends up being crap through Christopher Steele, which I've explained many times now. And he's on Rachel Maddow's show. And just hear what he has to say about the intelligence community. Play clip two.
Tweet, as you were just saying, President-elect's latest yeah. unsolicited pronouncement on the intelligence community. This was his tweet just a little while ago tonight. You see the scare quotes there. The yeah. intelligence briefing yeah. on so-called Russian hacking was delayed until Friday. Perhaps more time needed to build a case. Very strange. We're actually told, intelligence sources tell NBC News since this tweet has been posted, that actually this intelligence briefing for the president-elect was always planned for Friday. It hasn't been delayed. Okay. But he's taking these shot, this antagonism yep. is taunting to the intelligence community.
Let me tell you take on the intelligence community, they have six ways from Sunday at getting back at you. So even for a practical, supposedly hard-nosed businessman, he's being really dumb to do this.
What do you think the intelligence community would do if they were motivated?
I don't know, but from what I'm told, they are very upset with how he has treated them and talked.
Just to make it clear now, so Chuck Schumer, he's been in the Senate for, probably around 30 to 40 years. He's known about the intelligence community and how they've been acting unconstitutionally this entire time and how they've acted not only partially, but as well as unethically in their power that they've had. They have six ways to Sunday to get you. Why haven't you guys changed any of this? Why is that? You openly admit, you concede that the intelligence community is full of tyrannical, dictatorial, totalitarian authoritarians that go after their political adversaries, and you never had any problem with it. You admit it. You've been in the government for 30 years. You know the way they operate, and you know what they're doing is unethical. I mean, it's obvious the way you just explained it, and we have examples of it, and there's nothing that you've done this entire time that you've been in government, because you've known that you've been able to rely on the intelligence community, because that's how you Democrats get down. That's what you guys do, because you guys are tyrants. So July 6th, just another example of this as well. Epic Times piece, I wanted to cover this last week. I don't think I did. I might have. But just to kind of keep it brief, these detainees from January 6th, first thing is, there's no bail. They're in a D.C. prison. They go days without showering. They go days without any haircut, able to shave their face. On the weekends, they don't get out at all. Now, on the weekdays, they're in solitary for 23 hours out of the 24 hours in a day. Additionally, the water, there's reports coming out right now, the water is so black that they have to use a sock to filter the water to make it drinkable. And I will have this in the show notes. It'll be titled under January 6th, Detainees in Solitary 23 Hours a Day. It's an Epic Times piece. It's written by Isabel Van Bruggen. And I'm surprised that no one's covering this. These are outrageous claims. And if they are true, this has to be a violation of just inhumane punishment. I mean, this is unbelievable what's going on. And this is Third World Republic-like stuff. That's all this is. This is where dictators rise and they get more power. There's definitely a two-tier justice system in the United States. There's the establishment, the left wing, activist, loser, hack job, spineless cowards. There's the left wing, how they're treated. And then there's how everybody else is treated. If you're on the right wing, forget it. Then you're really treated harshly. But if you're on the left wing, you pretty much get away with almost anything. I mean, if you look at these people from Antifa, they're released, like, you know, the same day after they burn down a building or after they assault people on the street or they rob the liquor store or whatever they do. It's like the next day or, you know, even that same night in some cases, they're released back into the public like it's no problem. So to go on here, just more crap. Donald Trump sues Facebook, Twitter, Google. Fox News piece. It's a class action lawsuit. It's going to be, and this is going to be a quote from him. And I am very, very sympathetic to this view. I've explained it many times on the show, and this is why I'm against the libertarians on their view on this. So he states, and I quote, "While the social media companies are officially private entities, in recent years they have ceased to be private with the enactment and their historical use of Section 230, which profoundly protects them from liability. It is in effect a massive government subsidy. These companies have been co-opted, coerced, and weaponized by government actors to become the enforcers of illegal, unconstitutional censorship." Now, he called for the social media companies, he called them the de facto censorship arm of the U.S. government. Some very strong words. And he is correct, and I'll explain why. You had AOC, you had Ro Khanna calling for Parler to get shut down. Parler gets shut down. Twitter, as soon as January 6th happens, suddenly there's a purge of conservatives on their websites. And you had Elizabeth Warren as well as, Elizabeth Warren, while she was running on the campaign, was calling for Twitter to ban Trump. I mean, there's Democrats are the only ones that are calling for these private industries to kick people off the platform. That's the first thing. The second thing, and this is actually the more important thing. I mean, the one thing is the government, any private entity working at the behest of the government is strictly unconstitutional. There's case law to support that. That's the first thing. And this is why I disagree with the libertarians, because they think that this is all fair game. The second thing, and this is actually very, very important. There was a subsidy given by the taxpayer, by us, to these private corporations because of their liability protections. They're pretty much protected from anything that happens on their site. They have platform protections, but they act as a publisher, whereas when they have platform protections, they should just act as a platform and let everybody kind of speak freely. In this case, they have platform protections, but they act as a publisher. Now they're kind of in direct violation of what Section 230 says to begin with, or just rather the fundamental principle behind it. And additionally, because of that taxpayer subsidy, because we have for years, and this is a subsidy now at this point, they've said it's predicted to be around $1 trillion worth of lawsuits that they have been saved from. So $1 trillion tax subsidy from the taxpayer, $1 trillion saved from, they would never be able to get off the ground, and it would be much more competitive for a Facebook, a Twitter, and a Google / YouTube. It would have been very competitive for them if they didn't have those kind of protections, okay? That's the first thing. And because of this subsidy, now they're so powerful, they're so mighty, but they were funded. At one point, they were defended by the taxpayers. And now they turn around and flip us the double barrel middle finger. And we have no First Amendment right. Meanwhile, we were handing them over our money, in essence, or we were giving them protections. And those protections were funded by us. I mean, I'm not saying everybody has, everyone doesn't have right to ownership of your platform or your company, but considering this is a free speech issue, moreover than anything, it doesn't really make sense for them to kick people off just because they politically disagree with them. And that's really what's going on. This is discrimination based on political ideology. And I don't know if exactly, it's the only thing you can actually right now discriminate against. You can't discriminate against religion. If I go out there and make a religious statement, according to the Civil Rights Act, they cannot just kick me off the platform for strictly making a religious statement. And now in today's day and age, politics has become, and it's kind of transformed into a religion. So that is something that, I mean, whether you want to protect it or not, but the problem is there's a double-edged sword as the government decides to protect First Amendment sometimes and decides not to and decides to protect the Civil Rights Act, decides to go with one and then just decides not to go with the other. So yes, this is very, obviously, it's very conflated and convoluted. So Section 230, it states that, and I'm quoting from Section 230, it's called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. States, and I quote, "No provider or user of an interactive computer service shall be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another information content provider." So, in essence, that just means they are they have full-on protection from any liability of, they're not responsible for what I go on there and post, but they can still take it down if they want to. But whatever I post, if something bad happens because of what I post, they're not responsible for it at all. Now, this is what shielded Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube this entire time. And the biggest thing, and this is what actually gives them the power to just pull stuff straight off their platform that they disagree with politically, it's the civil liability suit. So they can pull you off the platform and you can't do anything. You can't sue them. You have no power against them. I mean, they do also have some sort of antitrust. Trump is really actually, I think, suing them in regards to antitrust law as well. I think that's exactly what he's suing them on, as well as discrimination. So the civil liability part, and this is the most interesting part, they're not liable on an account of, and this goes on to kind of explain it, any action voluntarily taken in good faith to restrict access to or availability of material that the provider or user considers to be obscene, lewd, lascivious, filthy, excessively violent, harassing, or otherwise objectionable, whether or not such material is constitutionally protected. So this is the biggest problem is the very last part. It says, or the otherwise objectionable part. So if I put up an opinion, and it's not gonna meet any of this thing. It's not obscene, it's not lewd, it's not lascivious. If I just put up a regular opinion, it's not excessively violent or harassing, they could say, well, that opinion's otherwise objectionable, which is a very broad statement. Pretty much we just disagree with the ideology and the idea, and we're just going to take it down because we can. That's all. That's what Section 230 does. And they can do that, and then you can't sue them. So there's an extreme amount of protection for some of these agencies. And they're going to, I think, go after them. So I have another article. It's just Google as well. They're getting sued for their Play Store in 36 different states. 80%, they hold 80% of the worldwide market in terms of their user interface or the Google Play Store, and apparently they're making 30% commissions on all downloads, so they're getting sued for antitrust laws, kind of like a monopolistic, like, practice. I mean, this is insane what's going on with, in a general sense. I mean, this show, I have so much good news on tonight's show, it's unbelievable. So I even have more, I have this new thing that they're talking about, putting cameras in public school classrooms. And I do like the idea of this. I think Matt Walsh was the one that brought it up to begin with. Now, I'm going to play a clip of him. He's on Tucker Carlson's show, and he's explaining how they should work and the reason that this is justified. Play clip 9.
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, I have to admit that the reform I would prefer for the public school system is to just destroy it, you know, reform it with a wrecking ball. I don't think it should exist at all. But if it's going to exist, then it makes total sense that obviously we should want to know what our kids are being taught when they're in these government buildings. Maybe I think there are a lot of parents who don't want to confront or acknowledge what exactly they're doing when they send their kid to public school. You're sending them to a government building for 7 hours a day, 5 days a week, 9 months a year for 12 years. That's what's happening. You should want to know what is going on, what's going on inside that building when they're there all that time. Now, I think there's the real reason why the left doesn't want this, and then there's the reason that they give us, which of course oftentimes are two different things. The reason they give us is that it's a privacy concern, or it's even a free speech concern. But first of all, teachers as government employees, in their capacity as government employees working with kids, they shouldn't get privacy or free speech any more than I want, you know, a bank teller. If I'm making a deposit of a lot of cash, I don't want them to turn the cameras off and go into a back room and say, oh, I need some privacy while I do this. No, we don't want privacy in your capacity handling money. You send your dog to a dog border. They've got webcams now so you can check in anytime. So why wouldn't we want that kind of oversight with kids? And I think the real reason, aside from the reasons they give us, the real reason is that they don't want us to know what goes on inside that building.
Well, but
I don't think, as you said, we have a right to know.
I'm sure this is going to be a huge fight. Seems like the Democrats are coming out fighting pretty hard for the teachers' unions. Teachers' unions are going to continue to fight for teachers in this case, and that's really what's important and fundamental about, and this is the difference between private industry and public industry. We actually have a right to have those cameras in those classrooms if it is a publicly funded education system. And now if they were privately funded, I guarantee you if the parents were to ask for that to happen, it would happen like this. It would be very quick to be done, because whether or not they have a job tomorrow relies on people paying that private institution for education. Whereas with a public institution or government-funded education program, to them it doesn't really matter, because they have their school board. They have certain ways to ensure that they hold their jobs. There's a tenure as well. They have their union. So they're not really worried about whether or not they do a good job. There's no incentive to do well as a public school teacher. It's all about taking, taking, and taking. We've seen this now over the last... We've seen this transpire over the last year and a half at this point. We've seen teachers' unions attempt to keep kids out of school because their own teachers didn't want to work. And it's not all of them, but I would say there must be a population of them that feel this way. And the leftists are like calling this 1984. They're freaking out over this. Oh, it's a surveillance state. It's a spy state. It's this, that. You know how many jobs have cameras to begin with? That's just simply to just state that to begin with is the first thing. And second thing is, we don't really care. We're the taxpayers. We're paying your paycheck. And if you don't like that, guess what? You can go get another job somewhere else. That's just the way it's going to have to go. And this is an extension. The teacher is an extension of the state, and I can explain why. Now, the mayor of your town, your municipality, you also will have a superintendent, in terms of New Jersey in particular, you will have a superintendent of that municipality who's kind of like appointed by the mayor slash the, depending on how your municipality works, slash the education board. So that's a person of the government chosen or appointed by government officials. And then they choose and they select who to fill some of these spots as teachers in the school system. And if they're not choosing that, they're choosing the people that choose that. So really, the teachers are an extension of the government. I mean, it's obvious. They're publicly funded. They're funded by your property taxes. And if you live in, you know, down south where they have county taxes, they're probably also funded by that as well. So it's very obvious, and they just don't want to be accountable for some of this child abuse that goes on in schools, CRT, because I think if parents actually start to see some of these principles that are being taught in their school systems, then I think they'd show up to many more board meetings. I mean, I know I have people in my family that teach, and they're teaching, they're being told to teach kids communism, and it's not direct communism, but it will be very subliminal messaging. It'll say, a boy and a girl, they live in a family, right? Boy goes, he mows the lawn, he does this, he does that. He gets paid $10 to do that. The girl washes the dishes and they pay her $8. Is that fair? And all the kids, they don't know how to answer. They have no idea. Teachers tell them, well, no, that's not fair because the girl's getting paid $8, the boy's getting paid $10. Yeah, but the two jobs are different. One may actually have more value than the other. Therefore, one should get paid $10 and one get paid... Now, if you said... The girl washes dishes and the boy, they both wash dishes, and the boy gets paid $10 and the girl gets paid $8. That's a totally different story. But that's not the story is the boy does a completely different job. So now you're kind of training kids into thinking that every single job should be getting paid the same. But it's a very subliminal type of messaging. And this is a real life example that I've heard from a family member of mine. So next, what I got. They're preparing the military, the Army in particular, for mandatory vaccines. I have this Army Times piece. Davis Winkle is the writer. Now, these are some leaked documents that I have here from the Army that they have obtained, the Army Times. The Army has directed commands to prepare to administer mandatory COVID-19 vaccines as early as September 1st, pending full Food and Drug Administration licensure. The directive came from executive order sent to the force by Department of the Army headquarters. Army Times obtained a portion of a recent update to HQDA EXORD 22521 COVID-19 steady state operations, which must just be a specific operation unit that they have. So this is what the portion of the update is, and this in particular says, prepare your units to get COVID-19 vaccinations as soon as everything gets approved. It's going to be mandatory. So it states, and I'm quoting here from this update, states, and I quote, commanders will continue COVID-19 vaccination operations and prepare for a directive to mandate, as in mandatory, mandate COVID-19 vaccination for service members on or around September 1st, 2021, pending full FDA licensure. Commands will be prepared to provide a back brief on service members' vaccination status and way ahead for completion once the vaccine is mandated. End quote. So yes, now they're telling people that are in the Army, and if I were you, I would I know how the military works, how you're supposed to take orders and you're not supposed to go against the grain. I would go AWOL. I would either go AWOL or I would take a dishonorable discharge. I don't think the government has any right to tell you that you need to get vaccinated. I don't know how this is constitutional. I really don't. So, I mean, this has been a big story in the news. No one really believed it when it first came out. I thought it was a joke myself. I thought it was, like, satirical. I thought it was edited, maybe. Joe Biden comes out, says they're going to start going door to door to give vaccinations. Play clip two.
Special focus on five ways to make gains in getting those of you who are unvaccinated vaccinated. Because here's the deal. We are continuing to wind down the mass vaccination sites that did so much in the spring to rapidly vaccinate those eager to get their first shot and their second shot, for that matter, if they needed a second. Now we need to go to community by community, neighborhood by neighborhood, and oftentimes door to door, literally knocking on doors, to get help to the remaining people protected from the virus.
So at first what I thought was that Joe Biden must have misread something. I thought maybe he confounded something from his briefing. Maybe he just had a Freudian slip. Maybe whatever. So then I turn over. I see Jen Psaki saying the exact same thing. Play clip three.
In more healthcare settings and respond to hotspots. The president will outline five areas his team is focused on to get more Americans vaccinated. One, targeted community by community door-to-door outreach to get remaining Americans vaccinated by ensuring they have the information they need on how both safe and accessible the vaccine is.
So the door-to-door outreach, this idea, it's this weird perverse idea that people don't know that the vaccination is out there, as if there's not billboards, there's not commercials everywhere. I think it's very safe to say that at this point, everyone that has been vaccinated is everybody that wanted to be vaccinated. I don't think anyone else, like, do you think that there's a big population out there that didn't know that the vaccine's out right now? I mean, I just think that the Biden administration, this is the only thing that they've actually been somewhat decent on. They kind of just followed the plans of the last administration with Trump. And they expected to have 70% of people of the population vaccinated by July 4th. It was 58%. And I think on this one, that's why they're going so hard at it. I hear a lot of people freaking out over this. The idea of going door to door to give people vaccines or give them information so that, or give them an appointment so they can get a vaccination. I think it's a problem. I also think that it's a problem now that they have a registry of people that don't, that are not vaccinated. So it's definitely something to worry about. What I would tell you folks at home is that I would actually say answer the door and tell them that you've already been vaccinated. And when they say, oh, well, that's weird, you're not on our charts saying that you're vaccinated, be like, well, that's really weird because I am vaccinated. Who can I call to fix that? And then call and tell them that you're vaccinated and somehow find a way where you don't have to go and get another vaccine. That would be the really, really smart way to handle this rather than, you know, take out your firearm and tell them to get the hell off your porch. Even though you could try to, I mean, you could do that. I'm not going to tell you what to do. I would say the smartest thing to do, though, is to lie and say that you've already gotten it and try to get some sort of documentation stating that you have gotten it. You know, not advice. I'm not telling people to commit any felonies or crimes. I'm just saying that would probably be the smartest thing to do. So weekly jobless claims, they rise to 373,000. This is a Bongino.com piece written by Matt Palumbo. He goes off of what CNBC had to say about this. First-time jobless claims totaled 373,000 for the week ending July 3rd, compared with the 350,000 the Dow Jones estimated. The previous week's level was revised up by 7,000 from 364,000 to 371,000. The level of continuing claims, the measure of ongoing benefits, decreased to 3.34 million, down 145,000 from the previous week's revised level. So yeah, so what we're seeing now is we're seeing more people claim, first time claiming of joblessness, which is not a good thing, but we're seeing people apparently get off of the benefits program, but it's a very, very small amount. Like, we're getting less people. 145,000 are getting off the program, but we're adding another 373,000. So overall, we're in the negative. We're adding more people onto the list of unemployment and benefits. So despite the uptick in first-time applicants, the decreased number of continuing claims represented the lowest level for uninsured unemployment since March 2020. And Peter Buchvar, Chief Investment Officer at Bleakley Advisory Group, added, and I quote, "Continuing claims continue to fall as about half the states have gotten rid of expanded benefits, and there is clearly a large amount of job openings for the taking with companies utilizing more enticements, such as hiring bonuses to bring people back." So that's interesting. I just like how the media tries to kind of play these things off, play the inflation off, play off the printing press right now, the government money machine that they have. They're playing all of these things off, as well as these unemployment benefits as well. So it's going to go on. It's going to actually explain how the reason for some of these drops in unemployment and people dropping off of the list for benefits, it's really derived from Republican-led states that stopped giving away all this free money. So now, according to a report published in the past couple of weeks, 26 Republican-led states ending federal enhanced unemployment benefits early. It states, and I quote, "The 26 states that have announced their plan to end participation in the $300 weekly unemployment bonus have seen a 12.7% decline on average in initial claims over the past week. Meanwhile, states that have indicated they will continue participating in the unemployment bonus programs have seen an increase in initial claims by an average of 1.6%. During the same period, the 12 states that have officially opted out of the $300 weekly bonus thus far have been consistent declines each week since ending participation in the bonus." So yeah, you're seeing people get back to work in these red states. In all the blue states, you're seeing less people get back to work. That's really all it is. I also had this very interesting study from CNBC too. It was stating that 39% of Americans right now, 39%, so let's say 40%, just to kind of round it up, 4 out of 10 Americans would be able to pay for a $1,000 expense. So then, that being said, you have 6 out of 10 Americans that would not be able to pay. If, let's say, your car broke down, your mechanic tells you, "Hey, listen, man, to fix this bad boy up, it's going to be another $1,000. Do you have the money to pay for this work that I'm about to do in your car?" You got 6 out of 10 Americans would tell them, "I have nothing." And there's a couple of reasons for that. I think we're a very consumerism-driven economy. You have a lot of people that spend money instead of save money. And the reason is there's really no incentive to save money if you're just going to put it straight in the bank, because the government prints money at such an exorbitant rate that it devalues your dollar, that you feel better in a high time preference or an instant gratification just spending that money as soon as you get it rather than saving it, because the amount of money that you save up, it's such a low value that it's really not worth buying anything big anyway. Like, there's nothing to save towards is really what I'm trying to say. So U.S. home prices continue to rise at record rates. This is foxbusiness.com, and I love the way that they word this at the end. At the very end of this, they say the reason for these rising rates are because people are working remote, as if, you know, inflation isn't a thing and then printing money isn't a thing either. I think it's really just laughable. This one's written by Brittany DeLay. So May's home price growth rate overtook April's at an annualized pace of nearly 18%, compared with 14.8% the month prior, which is April, according to a new report from data analytics firm Black Knight. Now, May marks the third consecutive month that the growth rate for home prices hit an all-time high. Early data the firm is tracking from June suggests further growth is likely. So this is what they're really saying is, if you took the pace in which the price of homes is going up in the month of May alone, if you took that, you averaged it out, and you applied it to 12 straight months, pretty much a year, it would be about an 18% increase in housing prices. Now, that would be the same for April, but April it was 14.8%. So for this, so we're seeing a pretty big increase in the pace of which the cost of housing is going up, or real estate is going up. So May's 2.1% increase in home prices is also the largest monthly increase ever. Garbosk noted that price appreciation has been widespread and recorded in each of the nation's 100 largest metro areas. The average U.S. home is up more than $33,000, or 10%, in the first 5 months of the year, and $63,000 since the beginning of the pandemic. So yeah, first, this is amazing to me. Oh my God, and this is without even June. They didn't even account June into this. The average U.S. home just these last 5 months has gone up $33,000. Just think about that. If you're somebody that's middle class, that's almost a full year of your work. It's gone up in only 5 months. I mean, these are, we've never seen increases. We've never seen numbers like this before. And it definitely is scary. And the media is kind of just playing this one off like it's no big deal. I don't really necessarily know why. Big corporations, this does play in their favor. Because they have the capital, they have the collateral that they can pull out more and more loans, keep pumping up the economy, and then just try to kind of keep steady with, as the inflation rises, hopefully the money that they put in, they're making a return to kind of keep up with the inflation. Whereas if you're a regular working class American and you don't really own that many assets other than your house, then how is it that you're supposed to keep up with the rate of inflation? You have to invest the money. Which is kind of why the market's a little bit of a bubble right now. I'd say at least a bubble in terms of the stock market, why it's so pumped up. Because people are investing their money because they don't know how else it's going to hold its value. And that's why I always tell people to buy Bitcoin. Bitcoin's a better version, really, of gold, to try to put it in a simple way. And I'm going to go over Bitcoin a little at the end of this one as well, or just cryptocurrency in a general sense, because now the government's trying to kind of get involved in it in a very, very bad way. So I also have this other article from The Street. It's written by Martin Bacardax, stating these 10-year Treasury bond yields, they tumble below 1.3%. So if you put money into a Treasury bond, your interest over those 10 years is going to be 1.3%. I don't know anyone that's really buying bonds, maybe other than a guy like a Warren Buffett, just because he has so much money. It doesn't even matter. And he does many different things to kind of hedge his bets. People that have that much money are investing in treasury bonds. If you're telling me in 10 years you're going to make 1.3% on whatever you put in here, I would much rather have the high time preference. I would much rather just spend the money than get a 1.3% investment return. You're better off putting your money in almost anything. I mean, so it goes on, it states, and I quote, U.S. Treasury bond yields slumped lower Wednesday, pulling benchmark 10-year notes to the lowest since early February, as growth concerns overtake lingering inflation fears heading into the release of Federal Reserve minutes later in the session. Benchmark 10-year Treasury note yields traded below 1.3% for the first time in 5 months Wednesday, while the gap between 2-year and 10-year yields, a key market gauge for future GDP growth, narrowed to just 1.084%. The notes were last seen at 1.33%. I mean, so it's just not good. The dollar's not looking good. Our GDP in the future isn't really looking that good. Our growth. And that's why the Treasury bonds are such a low interest rate. We could actually get to the point where it's negative interest rate on the Treasury bonds. So that's how much your dollar will devalue. Is it's not even worth buying, putting things into Treasury bonds or owning any type of assets. In that case, if you have a negative, if you're having negative interest rates on bonds, then we're definitely, this is a very, very monumental problem in terms of economics. You would pretty much just buy a safe and take whatever money you have and put it in the safe, try to buy up some hard money assets like a gold or like a Bitcoin, and you would just have to store it safely. You can't trust the banks at that point, because then the banks also are going to have negative interest rates, and it will be a disaster, really. It's just simply put. So This is the cryptocurrency portion of the show. It's my very last article. It's from the Foundation of Economic Education. It's a flimsy basis for Congress's claim crypto poses some sort of systematic risk to the economy. John Miltimore is the writer. He actually, I have this screenshot. There was a subcommittee on oversight and investigations, and this was some sort of PowerPoint presentation, and this was the title of this subcommittee. America on Fire. Will the crypto frenzy lead to financial independence and early retirement, or financial ruin? Which I think is hilarious. So, they're worried about a bailout on crypto. This is the way that they're looking at it. I have Representative Al Green from, I think he's from Texas. He's a Democrat, of course. He's a Democrat. He's a chairman of the committee. He laid out his concerns about cryptos in his opening statement, in which he referenced the severe financial calamities of the 2008 financial crisis, you know, the Bernie Madoff Ponzi scheme, the Allen Stanford Ponzi scheme as well. And this is what he had to say about it. And I quote, in each of these cases, investors and financial institutions suffered severe losses, then sought and or received bailouts from the Federal Treasury. Their refrain seems to have been, keep the government out of my life until I lose money. End quote. Yeah, so see, to that sentiment, I do agree with them. I think that's a problem. I don't think the government should ever bail anybody out. And this is actually the problem that I have with him, and this is the way Democrats think about everything. The government is the end-all, be-all. The government is going to fix everything. It's going to fix the world's problems. So Green wonders if digital asset investors will similarly seek bailouts if the price of cryptocurrencies run to zero. And he states, and I quote, if we believe that such is not the role of the federal government, should there be an amount or form of reserves required to backstop digital currencies or digital securities should they fail? End quote. So he's already getting prepared to bail out the banks like they did in 2008. He's already saying, so should we bail out the institutions? Should we keep a money in the reserve ready so then we can bail them out if something bad happens with cryptocurrencies? So John Miltimore goes on to he has this little section called, do cryptos pose a systematic risk to the economy? So this is what he has to say. The claim that cryptocurrencies pose a systemic risk to the economy is a serious charge, one I'd not heard before. A memorandum produced by the Financial Services offered some details on this claim. Financial Services is another federal government department. It states, and I quote the claim, cryptocurrency business operations could also pose risks to investors if businesses fail due to illicit activities or the inability to deliver the promised products or services. In addition to risk to investors, some experts have raised concerns that leveraged cryptocurrency positions and cryptocurrency derivatives could present systematic risks or systemic risks to the global economy. Emphasis added. So yes, there are certain derivatives, there's leverage positions, as there is with the stock market, especially derivatives, there's options contracts. I'm not sure exactly how the leverage positions work in the stock market. I'm sure there is some sort of leverage, but it's probably not, you know, 100-time leverage. I think it maybe goes up to 5 times. I'm not exactly sure because I'm not that familiar with it. But more importantly, in this, it's crazy, the financial services, in this memorandum that they had, they decided to quote and cite Jim Cramer, the dude, the Mad Money guy, the guy that's on I think he's on CNBC, he's on TV. He's the booyah guy, he always used to yell booyah. I don't think he really does that anymore, it's kind of goofy. It reminded me of my dad, honestly. So this is what he had to tweet, and they use him as a source, and it's ridiculous, and I'll explain why. He states, time for the SEC to consider crypto an asset worth regulating. That's what yesterday was all about, the need for regulation. 100-to-1 leverage is not healthy for the system. New systemic risk identified. So here's the thing with this idea of leverage, this 100-time leverage he's explaining. In the United States, it's already regulated to an extent where you cannot have 100-time leverage. I think the most leverage you can have in the U.S. on crypto assets is, I think, maybe 5 times. I'm not 100% sure, but I don't think it surpasses that 5-time mark. I think that would be a very liberal estimate. I don't even think that would be a conservative one as a 5-time. Now, the 100-time is, you'd have to go to another country to do so. So indeed, the notion that cryptos are not subject to regulatory oversight is false. As Kristen Parker, a partner at Reed Smith LLP, pointed out in her testimony, cryptocurrencies are regulated by numerous governing bodies, which she's correct. She stated, and I quote, crypto exchanges like Gemini and Coinbase are not regulated like the Chicago Mercantile Exchange or the New York Stock Exchange, but they are regulated by the New York Department of Financial Services as limited purpose trust banks. Yeah, so they kind of provide the liquidity. They provide the money for you to be able to buy and sell these crypto assets. But another thing is they also have anti-money laundering operations that go through the government. So they are regulated in that case. And they're also regulated in the, as they call it, the KYC, know your customer. You have to put down your social security number, your name, a lot of private information. I think also your government ID, your driver's license number as well onto their exchange. So you know who the person is. So therefore, there is a lot of regulations. You can't trade with the leverage that they're stating you can trade with. It's not going to be used for illicit activity if you're putting your information on those sites, is really the way I'm referring to it. So the real threat is now John Miltimore outlines this, what the real threat is. Congressman Green is trying to protect investors from cryptos, which he says could run to zero. But the real threat to cryptos are people like Green seeking to regulate or ban them outright. The notion that cryptocurrencies pose a threat to the global economy or taxpayers is silly. The only people who stand to lose money are the investors themselves, unless people like Green decide to shield investors from their losses, once again, like they've done before. And yeah, this is important. So if a business, big corporation, people that have a lot of money, they're under their own power if they're the ones that want to invest in this. If it's a corporation, you actually have to, especially if they're publicly traded, there's a whole review board. If you want to use whatever money is in your, it's on your balance sheet and put it into Bitcoin, you have to go through a review board to do so. It's not something you can just do on your own volition, unless if you're Michael Saylor, because Michael Saylor holds a very high majority of the stocks of his company. So that's the reason why he's been able to do it so easily and so seamlessly. For the most part, it's not easy to just take money from your balance sheet, especially if you're a big corporation. And this is what they're more worried about, is people that have a big corporation like an Amazon or a Walmart that employs a lot of people. If they went forward and they did something like that, and let's say cryptocurrency, whatever it is, say they buy some really crappy coin that's a scam and they lose all their money on it, then what are you going to do to all those employees at those companies? And that's, I think, what they're kind of worried about, but they're really not. They're just worried about bailing out big business like they've done before during the financial crisis of 2008. And that's really all this comes down to. They want you to have less economic freedom. If the government feels, they definitely are, the U.S. government, and you know, maybe some world governments as well, they're threatened by the idea of Bitcoin because it is a finite resource. There's only so many of them. They can't print more of them. Therefore, it's harder for them to continue wars. It gives a lot less power to the government because they can't just print money at will and really just take money from the people. They can't just go forward with a confiscation of money from the people. They're not going to be able to do it like they usually do through just government printing and quantitative easing. And that's why they see it as a threat. They deem it as a threat because they can't continue to fight wars. They can't do, there's so many things. They can't bail out the banks. It is a natural occurrence for there to be unemployment, for people to temporarily get laid off as there's innovation in an economy and some jobs become obsolete. But the government wants to prevent that completely by just printing more money and handing those people unemployment, then prolonging them getting back to work and also prolonging the innovation of our economy and the success and prosperity of our economy. And we finally found this asset that's not like gold in a sense where you don't need people to physically stand there and guard it. And you also, and it's almost infinitely divisible. Whereas with gold, you have to do it by weight. It's kind of difficult to have somebody break down some of your gold and weigh it. You know, in this case, with Bitcoin, it's so divisible that you don't have to worry about any of those things. So it also takes away a lot of that money as well. You don't have to really worry about. So yeah, I'm going to get to these quick headlines. I got a couple here, pretty solid. Walt Disney drops Ladies and Gentlemen, Boys and Girls. in their ceremonies. I remember I've been to Disney when I was a kid, and they would say, "Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, come on down to this, that, the other." They completely dropped that out of their traditional fireworks introduction, because obviously they want to be gender inclusive, I guess, or whatever would have you. Wokeism has infiltrated our society. And I think, as Abraham Lincoln, I think, said, he said, "America will never be destroyed from the outside. America can only be destroyed from within." And that's what the Chinese Communist Party have done. They've used the Confucius Institute to give money to some of our institutions and our universities to really just brainwash our kids and some of these college students. So teachers' unions still fighting to stay home. National Review piece. They're talking about now when they have to come back in the fall, because of this Delta variant, that they don't want to come back to work. Teachers' union officials, the people that are the heads of, I think it's like the Federation of Teachers or what have you, they want to ensure that their teachers don't have to come back to work, keeping even more women out of the workplace. There's a higher unemployment rate of women than in a very long time, probably since maybe the 80s, because women are staying home with their children because teachers aren't teaching anymore. So Biden administration deletes tweet with a Taiwan flag. This is American Military News. It's just hilarious. Biden administration once again capitulates to the Chinese Communist Party. They posted something with the Taiwan flag, and they came out with an official statement saying something like, "We don't want anything that we put out to be misinterpreted by, you know, other countries, and we want to be completely inclusive," and all this other crap. And it's like, then what about the Taiwan government and the Taiwan people that live there? You don't want to be inclusive to them. You just want to be inclusive to the Chinese Communist Party because you're afraid of them. So Biden, he moves up the date leaving Afghanistan. He moved it up to August 31st. CNBC article, very interesting there. I mean, it's getting worse and worse. They're definitely destabilizing the region in Afghanistan right now, which goes to show how much training we did over all those years of the Afghan forces to try to train them to be able to fight the Taliban. It was all futile and it was trivial. So Pelosi's husband, he bought $11 million of big tech stocks as legislation is being written for big tech agencies, which I find to be very interesting. They've been doing this for years, the Pelosi's. I think Nancy and her husband are worth $200 million. And it's pretty much because she takes insider trading information. She knows, because she has the power to help pass one bill or the other. So she knows what bill is coming down in the future and whether or not that will pump or will depreciate a stock's value. So her husband will either short the stock or he will buy up the stock. And it'll go up and he'll make a sell, he'll make money. So, very last one, red states. And this is another interesting article. Red states are lowering, and like I've said this many times, I've said we're seeing very small wins in some of these states. We're seeing much more local governance from the Republicans. They're passing constitutional concealed carry. They're stripping really some of these regulations in terms of the Second Amendment. And now in this case, the red states, they're lowering their state income taxes as well. And there's a bunch of examples of states that are just lowering. I think it was the one that was huge was Arizona. Arizona's lowering their income tax, which I think before was maybe around 5% to 2.5% flat rate. And there was like this stupid progressive system, which is, I think it's just unfair, where the more money you make, the higher percentage you pay. And they got rid of that. They completely eradicated that. Now it's just 2.5%. You got Ohio. They got a 3% tax cut. I don't know, but I just see that all of these red states now are starting to lower their income taxes, and this is another win, really, for the right wing, because nobody wants to pay more in taxes, and now they're just dropping everybody's taxes in terms of the brackets. They're getting rid of some of these progressive tax rates, and I see Oklahoma dropped it, you know, 0.25 of a percentage point. Then you saw about a half percentage point in Idaho, I believe. So yeah, some of these states are really getting along. You see that the Biden administration, they may hold the power, but we're getting individual wins in some of these red states for, you know, the right wing, which is, I guess, a good thing overall because it helps kind of shape the national politics. But that'll be it for this one, folks. I greatly appreciate it. I'm surprised I was able to get through all this content in a somewhat decent time. I know I ran a little bit over today, but I think this podcast, I put together a lot of good stuff. So I think it's well worth your time. I greatly appreciate it. Everything will be involved. Everything will be included in the show notes below, all the source material. So I will see you all next time. And like I said, I'm not going to be doing this next week now. There's going to be Monday, Friday. There's not going to be any Federalist Papers, but I will still have, because I'm going to be on vacation, I will still have the current events. Okay, so I'm going to have, you know, Tuesday night, current events. Or that one might be able to release in the middle of the day just because I'm on the vacation. And the same thing, weekend special next week. But I will have no Federalist Papers, and we're going to start those back up hopefully in the next week, just depending on what kind of time frames I'm looking at. Because like I said, I will be on vacation next week. So I greatly appreciate it, and I will see you all next time. Thank you.